Hey everyone, it's your host Kevin Jung. This interview was done on March 11th, so if you guys are listening to this on a later date, please keep that date on mind. I wanted to learn more about COVID-19 and give you guys, the audience, some good information from a healthcare professional. Dr. Behrman is the head of the infectious disease department here at VCU Medical Center. I hope you guys get a lot from this episode, and if you guys like what you hear, please share this podcast to other people so that we can spread good information about COVID-19 out there. Thank you. A paragon is a model of excellence, but what does that really mean? What can we do to become the paragon of our own narrative? I believe that perspectives and stories can help us on this journey. So join me, your host Kevin Jung, on finding the answer on how to be the paragon in your own life on this episode of The Paragon Project. Hello, podcasters. This is your host, Kevin Jung, and this is The Paragon Project. With me today, I have Dr. Gonzalo Behrman. He is currently the chairman of the Division of Infectious Diseases here at MCV. He graduated from Colgate University, studying at Buffalo and Columbia University. He is also the chief editor of the Medical Literary Messenger, which is a VCU online magazine for humanities and medicine. The reason why I decided to interview Dr. Behrman today, because of COVID-19. This virus is very new, and especially for me, this is the first big virus has spread as an adult, so I really don't know how to respond or what information to gather, and there's so much information out there that I decided to interview a professional in this field. Thank you so much for this opportunity to interview you. And the very first question I want to ask you is, what is COVID-19 and how is it different from something like the flu?
Well, COVID-19 is a new coronavirus. Now, coronaviruses are out in the environment. They are essentially what cause the common cold. This is a new version or variant of it that appeared at least first in China and has since gone to many, many countries, as you know. It can cause, in most people, a cold flu-like illness. Most of the times it's not severe. About 80% of the times it's not severe. 20% of the times it's severe enough to require hospitalization. It's different than influenza because it's a completely different virus. It also does not have a vaccine to prevent it yet. And there's no good proven antiviral treatments or antivirus medications that we have for influenza. So it's very different.
Okay, thank you so much for clarifying that and showing that only 20% of the people who got need to be hospitalized and need to go through that extra procedure.
That's correct.
Furthermore, I want to ask you this question. If someone's infected with the virus with a mild or moderate symptom, are there any at-home or over-the-counter treatments we can use to prevent more severe symptoms from developing?
Right. So at present, there are no good treatments or antiviral treatments. The best things to do if you're infected and not hospitalized is something called or known as non-pharmacologic interventions, which means you stay at home. You socially isolate yourself as much as possible. Try not, if you have roommates, you stay in your room as much as feasible. You don't go to class. You stay out of crowded environments and parties and engagements, social engagements. In addition, things that would be very helpful here is to practice respiratory and cough hygiene. So coughing into a tissue or into the fold of your elbow, certainly washing your hands frequently. And I think I already mentioned about not sharing things, so not sharing cups, utensils, towels, et cetera, with those around you. So those are the interventions that can really limit the spread of the virus from one individual to another. In terms of minimizing your symptoms, again, you can use symptom-related, they're called shotgun cold and flu remedies that decrease, for example, temperature if you have a fever, to decrease congestion if you're so congested, to minimize phlegm if you have cough. Those can be done over the counter, realizing that those only minimize the symptoms. They really don't tackle the core of the problem, which is actually the virus itself.
Got you. How long do you expect this COVID-19 to last?
Right. So our experience with these kind of epidemics or even pandemics is, you know, over the course of anywhere from 6 to 12 months, they will have reached its plateau and begin to recede. So I don't think we're quite there yet. In fact, we're seeing increasing number of cases in the United States and in Europe. So it's clearly a process that's ongoing. So my prediction is 6 to 12 more months.
If the virus continues to spread in densely populated areas, What are our options when facilities fill up, such as the hospitals?
Right. So those are, once you've gone beyond the surge capacity of an institution, that's a real problem. And that actually is a becomes a tax, a burden related to the public and the public's health. So there aren't great options, but then you're moving to things like taking alternative buildings or places to provide care, outdoor environments such as tents, those kind of things to provide care when you have such overflow.
How much do people's fear of the unknown play a part in magnifying the dangers of COVID-19?
Well, I don't know how much, but I'm certain that it's certainly a role or a part of the response is the fear of the unknown. So what I would say to you is today, here we are in Richmond, Virginia, and in Richmond, Virginia today, your threat of getting influenza is much higher than your threat of getting COVID-19. But that's not perceived as such by the general public. They see that COVID-19 is the greater threat, and that comes from a fear of the unknown. And it's also partially driven, I'm sure, by the fear that comes from the constant and ongoing reporting and the fact that we don't have either a vaccine or an antiviral medication for it.
Okay.
It's less common. It's less well known to people.
Okay. So I bet we've seen over the news how this COVID-19 has developed a strong xenophobia that came along with it, people avoiding certain areas, even bullying or threatening people of Asian descent and so forth. What do you think about that? And does that play off the fear of the unknown kind of thing?
It may or may not play off the fear of the unknown. I think that the xenophobia that comes from that we've seen from the emergence of COVID-19 is both really unfortunate and very sad. Let's be very clear, neither viruses, nor bacteria, nor parasites, nor fungi, they don't care about someone's race or nationality. They're equal opportunity. So it's really, really sad that either ethnic groups or Chinese Americans are being singled out for COVID-19 threats.
Did we see something similar when the Ebola case broke out? Was there also a little bit of xenophobia with that? I was pretty young when that happened, so I wasn't too aware about it.
Right. So with the Ebola, it wasn't necessarily within a nationality or a specific ethnicity. It was really more from just a fear of anything emanating from Africa. And as we both know, Africa is a massive continent.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, something in South Africa is grossly different than North Africa and Ethiopia and the Congo. It's very diverse. So it was just a general fear of contagion emerging from Africa.
Let's jump into more of the symptoms that with COVID-19. So what are some of the less severe symptoms that should result in just self-quarantine and just self-care sort of things? And what are some symptoms you should come to the hospital and get that checked out?
Well, unfortunately, there's no single symptom for COVID-19 that should raise a concern. It's not like something, it's not similar to a bacterial meningitis. You hear about those scares that will happen on a college campus, that a student will have a rapidly developing worst headache of his or her life and fever, and within 24 to 36 hours is comatose in a hospital. That's not going to happen with COVID-19. In fact, the symptoms for COVID-19 are similar to symptoms of really hundreds of other things. For example, fatigue, congestion, not feeling well, runny nose, maybe a headache, maybe a dry cough. Really, what gets concerning is when you have symptoms like that, like the common cold, coupled with things such as I'm not just having a dry cough or a sore throat, but now I'm having severe shortness of breath, which I shouldn't be having. And that's really concerning. Arthralgias, which is a pain in the joints, and myalgias, which is pain in the muscles, are typically seen with influenza and not with COVID-19. So that would suggest an influenza process and not a COVID-19. But it doesn't exclude COVID-19. So to really answer it, there is no single symptom that would suggest you absolutely have COVID-19. However, fever. Cold-like symptoms and shortness of breath or significant shortness of breath should prompt someone to seek medical attention.
Thank you for clarifying that and explain how there's a lot of different things that could go with it, and that the chances of getting COVID-19 is lower compared to influenza.
Yes, and there are hundreds of viruses out there that cause cold and flu-like symptoms but are not COVID-19.
In the early 1900s, there was the Spanish flu.
That's right.
And it dissipated during the warmer months, but it reappeared like during the fall when it got colder. Do you expect something similar like that to happen with COVID-19?
We suspect that that may happen also with COVID-19. But again, this is a very new virus, and we don't have a full knowledge or understanding of its epidemiology and pathogenicity or ability to cause infection yet.
Got you. So I mentioned earlier how there's so much information out there on COVID-19. A lot of reporters reporting different things, the White House saying something, CDC saying something.
Yeah.
So how do we decipher the information so it's more understandable to the general audience and to help us understand how severe COVID-19 really is?
I mean, I think we all know that we're living in the information age, and in this day and age, getting information on things at times can be like drinking from a fire hose. There's so much coming at you. What I would recommend is as follows. For high quality, credible sources of COVID-19 data, you go to the CDC for what's going on in the United States. The WHO, or the World Health Organization, has a very nice website, pandemic update on the global and international impact of this. I also tend to fancy or favor the New York Times. They have excellent coverage on COVID-19. So their website is very informative. And last but not least, CNN, the reporting seems to be spot on with respect to COVID-19.
Thank you so much for clarifying that and giving us all those sources. I know, especially with all, as you said, information age, just so much, so many things on Facebook, so many things on Instagram, so many things on the news that it's just sometimes just so much information, we just get become a little bit desensitized.
Right.
And sometimes we end up undermining the issue or like blowing up the issue for no good reason.
Now, for your listeners here in Virginia at VCU in specific, or even Richmond, anywhere in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I would strongly recommend they check out Virginia Department of Health, which is vdh.gov, which is obviously going to mirror what the CDC says because it's part of the health service or the National Health Service. However, it will give you local or Virginia-specific data or updates on COVID-19 situation, which may or may not be helpful.
Got you. So I know like everyone's wearing gloves, wearing masks and stuff like that to quote-unquote protect themselves from COVID-19. How effective are those forms of protection, and are there any alternative options for those protective equipment?
Yeah, so the use of properly fitted gowns, gloves, and masks is usually done by healthcare workers. Now, the general public is not face fitted for a proper PFR N95 mask. So what we know is by using properly fitted masks and properly putting on and taking off gowns and gloves by healthcare workers significantly eliminates and decreases the risk of transmission. Now, using these materials in the general public is probably of minimal benefit. Okay, so what can be done? Well, I think the most important thing is really to wash your hands frequently and to avoid touching your nose, your eyes, your mouth, which are the mucous membranes, with unwashed hands. That's an important way or easy way to transmit contagion or viruses.
Perfect. Well, I really appreciate this time right now.
Absolutely.
I understand you're in a very big time crunch, and
we're in the throes of things. Yes.
Yes. Everything is going on, and I truly really appreciate this opportunity. I know it's just 15 minutes or so, but then again, you know, any information helps, and any information from a healthcare professional such as you can definitely be very credible, and a lot of people would love to hear what you have to say about it. Is there anything else you would like to say about COVID-19 or the work you do?
Well, we at VCU Health are preparing every day and working through cases or potential cases here of patients or people who come with concerns of COVID-19. I'll be very clear, as of today, there have been no COVID-19 cases confirmed and diagnosed in Richmond, Virginia, not as of yet. Okay, but we certainly are working through people who are concerned, addressing their concerns, assessing them properly. I would also say that for the general public and for VCU students, since you are a VCU student, VCU, the university, has some nice updates of how VCU Health is preparing and staying on top of this issue. I would encourage you and your listeners to look at that. And again, for ongoing updates, VDH, which is the Virginia Department of Health, the CDC, World Health Organization, and major news outlets such as the New York Times and CNN are very helpful.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Behrman. And thank you guys so much for listening. I know that with everything going on with COVID-19, I know there's a big fear, xenophobia, and lack of information or too much information out there. And I hope that this podcast episode can really help you guys out and give you a little bit clearer understanding of what COVID-19 is, how significant it is, and how we should handle it. So thank you guys so much. If you guys got any value from this, please share, like, and tell your friends about it who are very concerned about COVID-19. Again, thank you guys so much for listening, and have a wonderful rest of the day.